The Last Word on Sport.
With Energia, supporting Irish rugby at every level. Energia, think of the possibilities.
And so let's go to The Last Word on Sport, and let's start with football. Will O'Callaghan is here for the entire Last Word on Sport from Off the Ball, host of the Hurling Pod. But first, Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent. Arsenal's season, is it in danger of going seriously off the rails? Looking very unlikely to get to the League Cup final, 2 goals down after losing at home the first leg to Newcastle, out of the FA Cup after the penalty defeat to Manchester United yesterday, and falling, well, how far back? 6 points behind Liverpool, having played a game more. What's going wrong for Arsenal?
I think multiple issues at once. Some of it stuff outside of the control. Some of it very much a consequence of some of the decisions Arteta has made. Mostly, I would say, in recruitment in the summer, which I think is maybe the first time in, kind of, you'd say, really 4 years of progress where they faltered. He offloaded three kind of substitute forwards. He only had five really that he uses. And two of them, or three of them now, have faced long-term injuries this season. Kevin Odegaard is over 3 months, Saka's out now, and now Gabriel Jesus. And it's left them very short of depth. And I think that's why, that's where, unless they sign, there is potential now for this season at least being very disappointing, if not going off the rails entirely. I think that, to be fair, they have had a load of other issues, not least kind of other injuries, some of these disciplinary problems, just the way things have gone against them. I know people kind of bristle with that said, but I think it's true. But it all might mean, though, I think that their hand has probably been forced. And after the injury to Gabriel Jesus yesterday, they pretty much have to sign this window. But then this is one of the issues.
But where are they going to get a centre forward, and how much financial flexibility do they have? Like, if they wanted to try and get Groikes, or however you Groikes, how do you pronounce his name? From
Jacare, I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
Said to me.
Okay.
But I'm not fully confident on that either.
Okay. You're our Spanish expert. But there you go.
but it's not a Spanish name. I think he's Swedish Hungarian, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay, but he would cost what, 800 to 100 million, would they be able to afford that?
Clause. I think the issue, and this is where you kind of get into bigger questions about Arsenal, actually. I think the issue is the way they've been run for a few years, and the way Arteta fits into it, they would rather make any signing in as a part of a medium-term plan. Like, he always has a kind of a natural place in the team. Even Kai Havertz, he has a natural place for the team that he seeks to sign someone. That's why they would rather sign exactly the type of forward he would like in the summer. And one of those would have been Sesko. And they have had a bit of an interest in Ferguson because he has a specific profile, especially physical profile, that Arteta likes. But yeah, as we say, that the hand has been forced. They do have a headroom in terms of PSO restrictions. And now they might have to just go out and do what they wouldn't usually do. But of course, it's more difficult to do business in January, and you're more likely to have to overpay, which is one of the issues there and one of the questions that comes into it in this kind of plan they have. But again, it's either that or face up to 2 months now without most of your forward line, which is a pretty striking situation. But as to what they do have interest in Jacarez. He has a release clause, but then all the suggestions are that he'd rather go in the summer. Sesko is another, but again, he'd rather wait till the summer. Now Bayern Munich are interested. And suddenly, yeah, there's a bit of a quandary.
Well, it's interesting that Miguel mentioned Evan Ferguson, because he has been injured so often for so long now at this stage. Really unfortunate timing, because otherwise he could be the type of player that a lot of big clubs in this window will be looking to buy.
Yeah, potentially. I think West Ham looked the most likely given the injuries they have, and Fulkrug is now out for a number of weeks as well. And then the news broke on Friday morning when Fabian Hertzler was giving his press conference that it's also a number of weeks that Evan Ferguson is going to be sidelined first. So the expectation is right until the end of January, he's not going to be available, which will have to hurt his chances of moving away from the club. You would have thought that Graham Potter going in at West Ham, again, as Miguel mentioned, a player of a physical profile where they can then put other forwards around him, he almost seems perfect for another spell with Potter. But unfortunately, it looks like Evan Ferguson could be sidelined until the end of the month. Arsenal, I would think, is probably more long-term interest in Evan Ferguson, but they do have a need at the moment for a creative solution, because Jesus looked in a lot of pain when he went off. We know that Bukayo Saka is out probably for 2 to 3 months, so it steals a lot of creativity over on that right-hand side. And if you look at the amount of chances, Matt, that they created over the two games against Newcastle and against Manchester United at the weekend in the FA Cup, they should have scored about 8 goals across the two games. They scored 1. And Kai Havertz is probably the the chief issue.
But Miguel, do you think would a player like Ferguson thrive and prosper even if he's still at an early stage of development? If you put him into an Arsenal team that creates so much, is he the type of natural finisher who would do better with Arsenal than perhaps he has even been doing with Brighton?
Now, just before we say that, there is one thing to say on Ferguson. Even if he was fit, Arsenal have an issue right now in that they can't do any more loans in the Premier League because they've already kind of hit their number there. So they would have to make either offload one of the loans or make one of them permanent. But yeah, like, I mean, the thing, as you say there, about Ferguson developing and fitting into the team better, like, this is where it's actually quite interesting, because Arteta, the way he's adapted Arsenal in this modern era, going up against City, the preference has been to buy younger players that you can mould. And that's exactly what Ferguson would be. He has all the physical attributes that Arteta would like. You know, even in terms of ability, obviously, they quite admire him. And he would be seen as someone they could bring on in that way. And yeah, exactly that. Suddenly, you'd be in a team that creates a lot more. I mean, look at some of the position. Even look at that Declan Rice chance yesterday. The header from a few yards. I mean, Ferguson would have, for a start, he probably would have headed it into the ground and into the net, as we've seen him so often do. Well, so often we've seen him do a few times for Brighton and Ireland. And that is what he'd have at Arsenal. But again, it's some way off right now, even if it's one, as for those of us who want to do Ireland to do well, obviously it's quite an appealing thought.
Okay, what about Manchester United, Will? Because I'm going to go back to what I said last week. Isn't there a touch of, you know, all the thing that Roy Keane have been criticising players for their attitude, that you can have all the skillful players in the world, but if they don't actually apply themselves, they won't win games? And what Manchester United now seem to have under Amorim is a willingness to apply themselves.
Yeah, I thought particularly impressive after Diogo Dalot got that second yellow card. So they ended up, because of the amount of time that was added on, they played the best part of 70 minutes a man short, and they were really good at defending their own box. Of course, there were hairy moments, the Lick clearing the ball off the line, that header that was missed by Rice. Kai Havertz really should have scored the chance that he had as well. Arsenal did create chances throughout, but they were dominating the ball. But Manchester with some kind of old school defending, and even Maguire was very, very good at that, where they were happy enough to get their three centre backs aligned, defend the box and make themselves very difficult to break down. And then a little bit further up, I think there's been a few hints that were dropped by Amorim last week that he fancies Kobbie Mainoo more in midfield than Casemiro. He's trying to get legs into midfield. He's trying to get work rate in. And if Manchester United are going to turn a corner, it's that type of performance where your backs are against the wall. It's not that they played with particular brilliant quality in the game at the Emirates, but Bruno Fernandes provides that moment with a fantastic strike. And outside of that, they were very, very solid and hard to break down.
Miguel, should Bender stay in goal?
I still think the kicking would be the issue there. I don't like, he was brilliant yesterday. I think it's quite a nice story after the criticism he had after the Tottenham game, as Amorim mentioned after the match, that he came round and produced in that way. Some brilliant saves during the game, and then obviously in the shootout. But in terms of the way Amorim wants to play, his kicking just probably isn't up to Onana's level. And like, this is what we're talking about with modern goalkeepers now.
Well, hold on. This comes back to this whole issue. Isn't the primary responsibility of a goalkeeper to stop goals going in? And after that, then
well,
you look
for
the kick.
Not
come on. I mean, yeah.
I mean, this is the post Guardiola era now. It's the goalkeeper is the 11th man if you're playing out from the back. It's that true, basically. If you don't have a goalkeeper who can play out from the back, there's suddenly a massive gap behind your defence. And you're going to be, I mean, look, I think it's actually arguable as to why Spurs have been so poor in terms of results for 3 months, because they've had a Forster in goal who just can't do that.
His save in the shootout was remarkable, by the way, the one from Kai Havertz. It's only when you see it in slow motion you realise what a strong wrist he has to get in the ball to actually push it out as well. There was a real risk that could have been a hand getting on it and still it trickles through. And then for the rest of the shootout, the one you have to highlight, David Raya put in one of the worst goalkeeping performances I've ever seen in a shootout. He got near none of them. And for the Lisandro Martinez one particularly, Matt, he jumped, which then gave Martinez the chance to stutter his run-up and then put it the far side. But then Raya dived when the ball was practically in the net. Now, I don't know whether that's bad intelligence coming from the Arsenal tactics team and they told him the wrong way to go for every single penalty, but it seemed that he just couldn't change up his setup at all. And United just knew what they were doing. They stuttered and put it the other side each time.
The way the results have changed for Manchester United, do you reckon, Miguel, that's it now for Marcus Rashford? There is no way back. But then, even if there's no way back, who are they going to persuade to take him on the wages that he's on as a loan signing?
So after the game, this was directly put to Amorim. Has Marcus Rashford played his last game for Manchester United? And he said, we'll see. So I think, given how managers usually talk in press conferences, we can take that pretty much as given. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in him now. I think more that was expected given the cost of him and the way people were talking about a month ago. I wrote today that Tottenham, for the Independent, that Tottenham have at least been investigating whether they can do a loan deal. But like this is where I think it's like in terms of what next, there's a few elements to it. Rashford's reported to be on over 300,000 a week. And if Tottenham were to get him, they would want Manchester United to pay a significant chunk of that due to their wage structure. And that's why I don't think that'll happen. I don't think
Where would they put him in the team? What position would they put him into?
Well, it'd be one of the wide forwards. But to be fair, Spurs have had an issue. I mean, you only have to look at poor old Timo Werner and some of his displays recently. So they do have, and also they maybe need a bit more experience, Spurs. But I mean, West Ham or another have been reported. I know that they've actually looked into it as well, but I don't think Rashford would consider that. He wants to be at a club where he can win something. And I think abroad, and actually Dortmund is one of the more likelier options for this season. And then they'll reassess in the summer. His dream would be Barcelona, but obviously given the difficulties they have in even registering Dani Olmo due to Spain's financial constraints or financial rules, there's absolutely no chance of that this window.
And I'm not sure Barcelona need him anyway, the way that they're scoring goals like they did in the Copa final against Real Madrid last night. Let's look forward to this week's Premier League action, because there's games Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. And Miguel, I'll just start with you briefly on Arsenal. Tottenham at home Wednesday night, not North London derby, but given the way Tottenham have been playing recently, is this the perfect opportunity for Arsenal to set themselves back on course?
You would think, except suddenly Arsenal have all this angst around them. I mean, the last week has probably been, in terms of results and the noise around the club, it's probably been the worst he's faced since December 2023 when they lost to West Ham and Fulham. And the same sort of questions are being asked. And while, exactly what you're saying there, you'd expect a game where against one of Postecoglou's defence, even if they were more restrained against Liverpool, Arsenal would create chances. But if they don't have a forward line, are we going to see the same sort of thing where it's now got into the players' heads, they've been missing so many chances, which is exactly what happened against both Newcastle and Manchester United. So, look, if all goes normally, I think Arsenal should win this 2-3-0, actually. But there is a scenario here where you can see they create chances, they miss a few, and maybe Tottenham just pulls something off. I have a little bit of a gut feeling about that, I have to say.
The game of the week, though, is tomorrow night, Will. And I'm of a generation that remembers the great battles between Nottingham Forest and Liverpool at the end of the 70s into the 80s, when Brian Clough was manager of Nottingham Forest. I mean, the only team that's actually beaten Liverpool in the league this year, having done so at Anfield, 6 points behind Liverpool, played a game more. And now people are wondering, can they do a Leicester City?
There's some striking similarities between both. Now, this is not me saying that they're going to do a Leicester City, but again, this is a team who counter-attack and counter-attack with purpose and hand out bloody noses to the bigger teams in the league. This Nottingham Forest team, I saw Monday Night Football last week, they were making the point that they've got the lowest possession rate in the Premier League. They average 38%, but also, perhaps crucially, they average the longest distance for shots against them, which is currently 20 yards out from goal. They give up very few chances. Nuno Espirito Santo is more than happy, again, to set his bank reasonably low and then use those creative and faster players further up the team to catch you on the counter-attack. So when Nottingham Forest have had issues in the league this season is when they've been forced to push the agenda a little bit, but they love playing against the bigger teams. And as you mentioned, they went to Anfield, set up a purpose after an international break and turned Liverpool over. If Liverpool aren't on it, and Liverpool have been a little bit indifferent in their form, I mean, obviously it was a much changed team against Acton and Stanley at the weekend, but if Liverpool play like they did against Tottenham Hotspur, potentially this Nottingham Forest team can get something out of this. I'm not saying they go on to win the league, but potentially they could take more points from Liverpool this week.
See, Miguel, I remember Nottingham Forest been built around Peter Shilton in goal and the likes of Larry Lloyd and Kenny Burns at centre-halves. This Nottingham Forest team also has a good goalkeeper and two excellent centre-halves, arguably the best centre-half combination in the Premier League this season. And then, although it may not have a John Robertson type, it's got three good attacking midfielders in behind Chris Wood, who does the sort of the Peter Witts job of getting loads of goals.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's going to be anything close to Leicester City. I think it's basically, I know this is the unfashionable answer and these sort of things are the unpopular answer. I think it's just a freak run of form, really. Now, who knows, you might be able to play these clips to me at the end of the season as people laugh at me and they have done Leicester. But in saying that, freak runs of form can go on. And there are, as Will has said, there are some parallels. One of the parallels, Leicester, obviously, they really had three individuals massively overperforming, Vardy, Mahrez, and particularly Kante. And I mean, as you pointed out there, Forest do have a bit of that, particularly at the back, where Murillo, people in football are talking about him as this revelation of a centre half, who Forrest have basically stumbled on as this world class defender, or certainly a world class in that system that they wouldn't usually sign. And I suppose, I mean, that's exactly what you're speaking about there. I suppose the issue, and this is where the game is interesting from both perspectives, is with teams like that suddenly surprise opposition, and exactly what we were saying earlier with kind of the post-Guardiola world and goalkeepers playing out from the back. In that sort of world, teams don't actually really play like Forest anymore. It's suddenly become quite distinctive and almost in its own way creative to play in the Nuno way because, you know, opposition sides have forgotten how to figure it out. Now, the flip side there, of course, is that you do that for half a season and you play everyone. And then suddenly you have to play everyone again. And then they obviously know what you're about. So it's going to be interesting how teams start to prepare for Forest now. And there's an extra edge to that, given that Liverpool may face the same issue with their start of the season. But of course, as you say, the one team to beat Liverpool so far were Forest. So they'll be heavily thinking about how to change up for this.
Okay, I'm going to have to leave it there because we've lots of rugby that we need to get through. Miguel Delaney, thank you very much for him.
The last word on sport.
With Energia, from local heroes to international legends, we're proud to support Irish rugby. Energia. Think of the possibilities.